I'm Hannah, and this is Graveyard Gathering, my own little writing graveyard where things are aged, knocked over, and imperfect. A place for my work as a necromancer to explore all of the things with death and great morbidity and, I'm sure, lots of grave mistakes. Come gather around. I'd love to talk to you. Hey, so it's 2022, and this is season 3. Apologize ahead of time if there's any background noise. I do have to do this in my van, and it's Iowa in winter, so it's cold as shit. What's going on season 3 of Graveyard Gatherings? Well, I'm about to tell you. We're doing mostly the same shit on a different day, my friends. It's very same shit, different day. Death stuff, spooky stuff, witchy stuff, all that stuff. Probably pseudo and pop psychology stuff, and probably me rambling on and on, probably me getting off track and talking about birds, but let's hope we avoid that again. The world is in a wild place right now that honestly gives me quite a lot of anxiety. We are mirroring a lot of 1922 and things that happened 100 years ago, things my great-grandparents witnessed. I'm suddenly feeling so much kinship with my one great-grandmother, my matrilineal line, my mother's mother's mother. And the fact that she was born in the 89 of the century before she primarily lived, and she lived through the epidemic. She lived through the Roaring Twenties and the Great Depression and World War II, it fucking won, like, all of it. And she was this very small, scary-looking, harpy, bird-like woman that was apparently incredibly funny, incredibly witty, an amazing survivor who went through the Depression widowed with 3 daughters to feed. And so the connection with her is really amazing, but also comes from the fact that I'm going, how much relating to me can you do, Grandma? Because I'm nervous about the direction shit is going. Teresa Rigby, honor be her name, had to make survival decisions that I hope I am never, ever fucking faced with. And she raised my grandmama, who was like a beacon of kindness. It was kind of almost like ridiculous. She got Alzheimer's when I was 7, my grandmother did. And so she kind of became a family mythological figure of sainthood, that she was a human being, but she was uncommonly good. But like my great-grandmother, I have 3 children, and right now there's a pandemic. And shit is scary. And if you're neurotic like me and you recognize the way that history repeats itself frequently, you would look back at the things that happened in 1922 and be like, oh yeah, no, like it didn't get better, man. Some things got better. Some things got so worse. There was a, you know, we talk about climate change now. There was a freak snowstorm in Washington, D.C. in 1922 that collapsed the roof of a theater and 98 people died. Okay, I promise it's not all doom and gloom. I promise. I promise. We have to be informed by historical context to understand the risks in our environment. And one of the things that we can do to cope through the different feelings, because Spirit was literally like, this is the type of necromancy we about to get into. I am minding my business trying to talk to Spirit. Like, just leaning into trying to get some good vibes or something, some encouragement, whatever. I am trying to raise my vibration and my energy. And Spirit's like, I'm going to pull no punches. Remember, Spirit goes to me, remember that dream you had where you were in the helicopter crash and you recognized that the helicopter was completely out of control? There was no way to save this situation. You could not take control of this helicopter. You could not fix the situation. You were going to die. You recognized the helicopter was going down to the ground. You could see the ground rushing towards you through the front windows of the helicopter. You had completely accepted your fate. You closed your eyes. You were completely at peace. You were just like, there is nothing I can do here but accept this. Spirit was like, that That's very present. That's very in your being. You are no longer living in the past or the future. You are simply experiencing every last second because you have accepted there is no longer any control over what is about to happen to you. What Spirit reminded me, I did not face that with any sort of fear at all. It was just complete acceptance. So it was not scary. I was not feeling any feelings of being scared. It was just this weird, complete letting go and being in the present. Now, I didn't experience the crash in that dream. Thank God. I think I woke up right before we hit the ground. The Spirit was like, your life is like being in the helicopter crash, babe. You don't have any control, and your control is an illusion. Your purpose is less of a deal than you think it is. You just exist. You're just a being. And you're just going to keep being until something changes. But like, that transformation of death is just not like... In the different times that I've been very, very close to those different feelings, there's never been fear. And what I'd like to tell you is that I had a couple of traumatic experiences from early childhood onward that for a very long period of my childhood, I was profoundly, neurotically afraid of death. There are still moments where I'm like, yeah, I mean, guys, it doesn't sound fun. And Spirit's like, it's like being born. You don't remember it. Let it go. It's just a thing that happens to you. But it's not the biggest part of the experience, love. The thing that has kept me the times from really fully ganking myself, because I've gotten pretty close. I gotten like stupidly close, but wasn't able to just make the final. The thing that has kept me alive has been that, like reading a book, I have to know how the story ends. And if I'm alive, there's still a more possibility. And I really hate this right now, and I want to dip the fuck out. I'll be in that space of like really, really struggling with the decision whether or not to keep my dumb ass around. And the thing that will sometimes keep me alive is just the nagging. Like, I have to fucking finish the story. I never know what happens for the whole fucking thing. I'm the main character of my life. I'm not the main character of anybody fucking else's life. I'm fine with that. But at least for me, I get to be the main character of this experience. I clearly am not writing whatever fucking tabletop game I am stuck in. I didn't write the rules. I'm just some random character plonked in here. But sometimes relating to my life with that kind of disassociation helps me fucking get through it. And yeah, I just think we respawn. I don't know, I don't get the whole process. I just, from my own children's mouths, believe in reincarnation. My firstborn son, my technically middle child, but he was the first one my husband and I had together. When he was about 2.5 and 3 and could really start talking, he would talk about dying with a bizarre matter-of-factness. And his story never faltered through years. He finally forgot it around like 6. Sometimes he brings it up because he remembers us talking about it and us telling him, but he doesn't have any direct memories, I don't believe, anymore. But from 2.5, 3, 4, 5, maybe into 6, he was definitely, definitely on that. So from what he would tell us, my husband and I have, you know, different ideas of what could have happened to him, but he would tell me, Mommy, you know I died before, right? And these are just not... My son has language delays. The sentences that would come out of his mouth were surreal. My son is wired very much like me, but also It's so weird. He got the like the weirdest mix of my husband and I, because he is autistic like me, but also ADHD like his father, and he's much more wired for mathematics than me, and I'm much more wired for language and he's not. But I think that could develop because he loves writing stories. Anyway, this didn't seem to come from his imagination, and he was so certain of it. And it's so weird to see a very small little preschooler be so goddamn serious. My mother nicknamed him Happy. He's a happy-go-lucky, just jolly little baby boy. But would sometimes just deadpan me with, "Mommy, remember when I died and then I missed my family and I came back?" And I'm like, yeah, I know about that. So then he'd tell me about it. And he would use words he didn't fucking know yet. He goes, "Mommy, I flew the plane for the king. I flew a plane for the king, and then it went down in the ocean, and I didn't have a parachute." And I was like, "You know the word parachute?" I was like, "What the fuck is happening?" It was bizarre. Whenever he would talk about it, it was very not like my little, normal, weirdly developing 3-year-old. He's this just very serious matter of fact, he needed to tell me about this. And that mirrors an experience of his father, when his father was the same age, 2.5, 3, 4, and 5, into 6, his father could recall specific experiences of the Civil War and tell people about the Civil War and the Revolutionary War, both of them very specifically, 2 separate timelines. But the Civil War was the one that he remembered the most, and it was the battle where there was picnickers. And then he remembered learning about it in elementary school and being really traumatized because he was like, "I thought all of that was a dream. Why did I dream this?" Like, he wasn't even convinced that like it was a past life thing. He just knew that as a child, he thought about that a lot, and it wasn't knowledge he had. So my husband's first child has had interesting spiritual observations over the years, but I had not heard him have past life experiences. But he will say profound shit to me, like he was 3 years old walking around going, "Mommy, those clouds are made of heaven, and I know it." He is always my one who is inquisitive about, he'll have long conversations with me about God and theology. And then my daughter, my water broke over my grandfather's grave on the anniversary of his death, on the same hour that we found his body the goddamn year before. I looked at my mother and went, "I'm not peeing, Mom." My husband is cleaning snow off my car, and I fear that it is loud. But like, I'm not asking him to stop because he's a very nice man and does not make me do this. It is a chore that I dislike. But yeah, on top of being born or going into labor on the anniversary of her great-grandfather's death, my daughter will attract birds of prey. They have sat on our car repeatedly, sometimes while the car is still moving, to look at her. She was under 1 year old in a rear-facing baby car seat, and this big fucking hawk, big-ass hawk bird, they're big. They're big when they're fucking on the back of your car looking at your baby. The car was moving. Like, we slowed down. I think we were going maybe down to like 10, 15 miles an hour because we were like, "What is happening?" And out the back window, and my daughter is just giggling and laughing and playing at the bird that's staring at my fucking daughter for 1/2 mile down the road on the back of my car. And that's happened like a fucking couple times. She was with me the day I saw the Merlin Falcon. And her name means light bringer, and she sprinkles joy wherever she goes. She knows she's adorable, and so she gets away with some shit being the baby, but she makes a point. She really sprinkles love absolutely everywhere her little thunder steps tread. So yeah, in true Hannah fashion, that was a very long diatribe about my fucking family. I don't edit this shit. I don't even fucking listen to it, guys. I have to put it out there or I will never, ever do this ever. I'm working through it, y'all. Someday I'll have a polished product, maybe, but like, I have to participate in capitalism and have a job. So I don't have a lot. I have energy to record this shit. I endeavor to be better. The spirit's really leading me into the dualities of the generations of my family, the generational curses that we are actively trying to break right now, the ancestral energies that we're trying to call in, the ancestral energies that we're trying to bind, the ways that we are deliberately trying to change the family dynamic, and just fucking the ways those things relate to the people who walked before us and relate to the suffering and will give strength and remind us that the path is just the path and it doesn't have to be terrifying. We can't really do as much about all the big things. You just put your hands to the good work that you can do in the place that you are. It is hard to face some of the realities of the world. My mother and I were having one of our deep talks, and boy, I cannot wait to share her with you here, because I'm smart, but my mother has a master's degree. She's fucking well read. She's 100 times smarter than me, and she is compassionate and a general in her fucking bones, man. She is an old ass fucking hippie who she is chomping at the bit to protest injustice and oppression. She's already on like voter rights and like how much she really wants to specifically protect abortion rights. My mama is down, and she's a boomer, but she's down. But she and I were in one of our deep talks, and we do a lot of healing together in those talks. But we were discussing how it is sometimes very difficult for us to even imagine higher power existing in a universe, in a world that includes genocide and starvation and exploitation, and all of the bad things are very hard to accept without. We're both like, wow, it is very hard not to be fucking cynical. What kind of a higher power cares about Marsha in her car praying about finding her glasses and finding them going, thank you, Jesus? And the little kid who lives in a garbage dump, why doesn't he get a thank you, Jesus? You see what I'm saying? Sometimes we get angry. And I just don't. Spirit is like, you get tripped up in trifles and things that were not a part of your design. You didn't design the world, Hannah. You didn't get to pick. You didn't get to pick a utopia where there's no money and everybody gets a fucking long. You gotta live in a world with conflict and pain. You will not be spared suffering in your experience, so put that idea out of your mind. And be grateful for every time you see yourself being able to make it through the suck you are presented with. A spirit whoops my ass up and down. No time for how much I bitch and moan, and I bitch and moan a lot. We like black and white. We like the easy answers. We often want the fast food McDonald's version of life because there are a lot of systems working against most of us. This whole thing was not designed as a fair place. So you got to figure out how the fuck to move through it. And so I like to spend a lot of goddamn time ruminating because the moving part scares the shit out of me. I don't fucking know how you make it through certain tragedies. There are people that I just love so fucking dearly, and the amount of trauma that they have had to hold in their cup as human beings and the fact that they're still walking around functioning astounds the fuck out of me. I'm like, I don't know how you function and be a person, because if I were in your shoes, I would be goo and probably be worm food rotten in the fucking ground, because no, I don't think I can make it through the shit that is on your plate, my friend. That is hard shit. But I'm betting there's somebody out there in the world that might look at some of the shit that I have on my plate going, wow, I couldn't handle yours, because this isn't the fucking pain Olympics. There's never gonna be a gold star at the end of the trauma tunnel that says, you win, you've got it the worst. We can live in the duality that multiple people got it shitty. Make space for everybody to fucking goddamn be valid. But we don't practice that a lot because we're human beings and apparently we fucking suck a lot of the goddamn time. I'm often reminded that my lens of the world fails to see all of the good that human beings do. And I do think that there are good that human beings do. I try to put my drop in the ocean of good work with my hands. But sometimes the fucking amount of bad leaves me in a puddle. And I look at spirit like, I've been trying to understand death and injustice this whole fucking experience. You want to give me some fucking truth here? Because if this was designed by a god, then it is poorly executed. I should probably try to get up off my soapbox, but I'm mad at God sometimes. Because I don't understand. I was always taught that there was some grand plan. I was taught that God is in control. There's a grand plan. God works in mysterious ways. What? This is somebody's game mechanics. Why did they have to plan greed and war and pain into it? What the fuck? Why do we have to do that? See, now the Christians would tell me, original sin, it's our fault. Fuck off. Don't put the tree there. You're the God. Don't put the tree there, right? Aren't you omnipotent and all powerful? The fuck? Okay. Another sidebar. Why I left Christianity, the thing that broke me was I kept asking, why did God make people to damn them? Because there was a lot of xenophobic anti-Islamic rhetoric that was fed to me in my fundamentalist church. It was a cult. And I could not understand it. Because everything I could understand that there were certain radical groups, but I could see radical groups within Christianity. I didn't see how they were different. I knew that there were moderate Islamic people that weren't hurting anyone, and their faith was their utter conviction. And oftentimes just simply because of the accident of their birth, the way my faith was the accident of mine. And I just was like, why would God make all these people to damn them when they're believing something with their utter conviction? That seems like a flaw in the plan. You're telling me this God is loving and merciful and died for us. Then why is he the only way and you're damned? Wait a minute. This isn't what? My mother named me gracious and compassionate. She told me the meaning of my name from the jump. She had it written places. That's burned into my fucking brain. So I couldn't possibly reconcile it. And I was just like, I can't do this. I'll never forget my last time at that church. They were talking about the spiritualist camp that is in this town and speaking about how it was demonic and how they wanted to run it out of town and all these amens. And it felt so burn the witch that I had a panic attack and had to leave the sanctuary, get out of the church. And I was crying and in my car, just breathing and sobbing. I'm like, these people, if they knew me, would condemn me. These people sit by me and smile at my face. But if they knew me and just that I'm different, the way they would put a scarlet letter on me. I looked at my mother. I'm like, I never want these people touching my children. I don't ever want to be here. And no. And when the pandemic happened, my mother stopped going and it finally like broke the cult brainwashing over her. And I thought that was going to break my mother. She spent 25 years in a cult where it was entrenched into her identity. Everything that I was doing, she was taught was a blasphemy. When I was 19, she found a bunch of my witch study books and my booze stash. And she, the substance abuse counselor and husband of a rancid alcoholic, found my booze stash, just poured it out, didn't even fucking mention it, but lost her goddamn mind about my witch books and that I brought Satan into her house. And then under 10 years later, I do tarot readings in her dining room. And then now I can show her readings that I've done for myself and she'll validate and affirm them. And now she talks about the divination that she does for herself. And she shared with me yesterday her first divination for herself. And I was just like, oh my God, this is so cool. That is some wild ass transformation. I was so proud of her too. She was so excited to share with me like her words and interpretations of it. And she knew it was divination and she acknowledged that. And she was laughing about how many Christians she sees do, she has known that do this particular form of divination and think that it isn't one. And she's like, it totally is. This is divination. Why don't they get that? That's witchcraft. She's like, oh, is it because I use technology? It doesn't count. She's like, it's all how it's marketed. She's like, they don't care about the principle. They don't actually care that they're doing the divination because they only care about things that are marketed to them as Satan. And that was cool to see. That was so cool to see. And my mom was doing divination for herself and manifesting, telling me how her sister was manifesting. And she was so excited about it and trying to have hope. And I was just like, ah, tickled fucking pink. I'm really hoping I can get my mom on the podcast here to tell you some of her great spooky and witch stories, because she has some of the best ones. My mom was close friends with these hereditary witches in the 60s and 70s and remembered going to their house and seeing that they had a hereditary family grimoire, and it went back into the 1800s. And my mom's like, you could feel the energy from this book. She's like, I didn't want to touch them. I didn't want to look at them. I was terrified of them. But like, and she's like, they did some wild shit. And my mom ended up knowing about these crazy covens in the South. Okay, I got to have her on here because she'll tell the stories better than me, but she might not want to tell them. So I'm going to spill some of the good deets. So my mom had all of these different woo-woo people connections. So one time when she was trying to dissuade me from witchcraft, she told me about her connections. And that one of her witch friends, I can't remember the position in government that this person had. It was like something either, like, I don't know if it was a senator or a congressman or governor. It was something in somewhere there. I don't remember the details now because it was just somebody in government. And that her witchy friend had married this government guy. And my mom used to fuck around with CIA guys and G-men. She's wild. So she was a witch, and my mom was like, no, she would tell me that she would advance his career and do, there were different things that happened politically that she was saying she was manipulating with witchcraft. And my mom's like, you know, that could have been a stunt. She could have been trying to like impress me or whatever. But she said that the woman was like, oh no, she ended up getting out of it because it was so dark and so demonic and so bad. And you can't touch that stuff and da 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 da. And it stains you and da da da. This like cautionary tale of this random government guy's witchy wife that my mother knew in the 70s. That was like making pacts with demons to further some probably Republican guy's career. These are the things my mother tells me. Does this inform you about who I am? My mother had me at 36. Before that, she was this barren party girl. She wasn't supposed to have kids, and she never ever planned on being a mother. And I always found that hilarious because I think she's an excellent one. But she lived a life, man. She went to Paris and fell in love with this Moroccan rich guy, and almost got married, and just, she was wild. Her first husband was a half Irish, half Italian man with a very deep, traditional Italian family that was in waste management and construction. That is all I know about the family, waste management and construction. My mother's name was Papagni. And then she lived in Dallas, and her soulmate was a gay guy. And my mom ran around the gay scene in Dallas in the 1980s. In the middle of the AIDS epidemic, she watched a lot of her friends die. And that informs this lady that now walks around and is my mom. She was a pot smoker, hard drinker, deep thinker. When she finally left her abusive first husband, Mr. Papagni, that they now have this very weird, very healed relationship where, like, my mom goes and visits her ex-husband, much to the hilarious consternation of my father, but he, like, doesn't, like, have a problem with it. Like, he's insecure because he's insecure, but, like, he doesn't, like, kibosh it. He supports her. Oh, my God. I don't even know where we are, but I was, like, trying to cut down on the last, like, several minutes of that ramble because I was like, oh my God, that was an unnecessary deep cut. At some point, you guys are gonna meet my mom. And she's a fucking cool bitch. And she's deep as fuck and has really neat, deep thoughts about a lot of this shit. And she's had some cool experiences. And when I love things, I can talk about them endlessly. I'm fucking autistic. And so that happens here. I can't help it. When I love things, I do not fucking shut up about them. And I really, really love my mom. I can ramble endlessly about my fucking family because I love them. They're like, that's a very happy subject for me. Sorry. We're trying to raise this very intentional, spiritual, ethical family. And looking at who our ancestors were and how we honor them, respect them, and occasionally bind them and break the trauma that they laid out for us is just, it informs about how we exist in this being and this experience here. When you're doing ancestral work, you can't ignore who your ancestors are. You don't know the majority. And so there's lots of rooms for painful strangers. There's lots of room for generational trauma to lay its roots and roots and roots. And it's just very impossible to imagine. Because once you get like 10 generations back or something, you've got like 10,000 ancestors. You think that all 10,000 of them were great motherfuckers? Let's be real. Everybody's like, a lot of people got a weird cousin or a creepy uncle. So like, not everybody's great. That shit informs your experience in the present. It provides context to the shit that you may experience in your life. It's good to honor the good and acknowledge the bad and try to break the cycles that are painful or violent or harmful. I think that a lot of people now are really trying to do that. I see it in memes now about breaking generational curses. And when I was growing up, that was just a weird fundamentalist thing that people tried to do very literally. History can inform us of the obstacles that we may face, but we get to decide how we react to them, and we get to examine the information and context we have. Those are the things that are supposed to make us feel better when we're anxious. The overarching thing is that death isn't the end of anything. But trying to live your story and live in this experience here as long as you're meant to is a good thing. Not trying to like flip the script and jet out early. All right, I'm done rambling for today. Sorry, this was a ramble. Decided instead of making a separate episode because I felt particularly rambly in a secondary period, I would put all these rambles together. Today has been so, oh my goodness, lots of emotions. So you may remember in a previous episode where I drew the hourglass cards and I was talking about being confused, and spirit brought all that to bear today. Would you like to know that the underlying message is the fact that I have codependency problems? Woohoo! Yeah, I wasn't thrilled. So, on January 1st, I took a step and contacted someone in my family that I'm estranged with that has a repeated cycle of hurting me. And I really felt like those hourglass cards were talking about that whole situation. And so it ended up being revealed to me that the period of time where contact would have gone smoothly and without hiccup was that was a closing window. And I was like, well, I'm not going to do this before I feel ready for it. I'm only going to do this when I get there. So it just can't matter. Like, urgency can't be a part of this. And so the communication hiccup, I really felt like was just another kind of excuse to reject me. It's really, really easy when someone notifies you that there's communication to just be like, oh, I'm no longer on this platform. Reach me here. You know, whatever. And that's not what happened. Because I'm talking to, like, there was third-party communication of, you have an available message on this platform. It's very easy to be like, I'm no longer on that platform. Reach me here. And I didn't come out of the ether with making contact. There was unblocking me on social media. There was Christmas cards. And so it wasn't just like some random idea I had to break no contact. I had been alerted that there had been attempts to contact me. So this was a thing that I talked about with Spirit really heavy, because obviously I've been pulling cards on it and grieving up my ass for 16 months. When you are family with someone, it's a unique position that allows for a lot of hurts. So I was really like, are you fucking kidding me, Spirit? What is this? And Spirit was like, baby, this was an opportunity for you to get to pick you. And it's okay that you had to learn this lesson again. And it's okay, but no relationship that is healthy relies on jumping through all the hoops to get it. If you miss a crazy window on of information you had no idea about, this is just, honey, come on. Relationships that are healthy don't do all of this. I was like, right. But Spirit really came back to, like, this triggered my self-loathing. And Spirit's like, yep, yes, it does. It really does. And I'm very sad that you feel like Shrek and you feel like a troll. Remember that your value is none of those things. And the comparison, baby, is the thief of joy. So when I talk about the messages that Spirit gives me at different times, there's two modes that I get messages from Spirit from, where Spirit calls me baby and where Spirit calls me bitch. Both of those come with so much love. Sometimes I often only share when Spirit's calling me bitch. And I really want to be clear. Yeah, there's just two modes there. And when I'm really, really low and it's really bad, Spirit calls me baby. Spirit calls me bitch when I'm obstinate and is trying to get my attention. But it is all with so abundant love. But I had even gone to my dead brother. I have one of those. I was sitting on my porch as I was composing my message and trying to figure out my boundaries. And I was like, I don't talk to my dead brother very much, because I didn't get to know him very well in life. And so I'm very wary of, like, I have a lot of filters of rejection there and a lot of familial trauma there. So that's not a thing I touch very much. Typically on the anniversary of his death, I reach out to him, or his birthday. But it's I don't go there too hard because, again, big rejection. And I've never felt that rejection back. It's just a fear I have from trauma that I have. But I was looking at him like, look at me, man. I'm trying. I know that you would like to see us unified. I know that you wouldn't want me to maybe be in this estrangement or whatever. And I didn't really get any, like, confirmations or nothing was super clear there. But I was kind of casting outward with, like, please see me trying, man. Please see me in this life making an effort, because I'm hurting so bad. And I hope that you've seen how much fucking tears I've goddamn shed over this. I was in that neutral space on my porch where I do a lot of that kind of praying. And I was just like, come on, man, please see that I'm trying. And I wish I could tell you that the fucking skies parted, or it was one of those times where I got orbs in my purse and notebook paper out of nowhere and things like that, because of those kinds of magical shits have happened to me. But no, it was just silence. It can be difficult when you've had unexplainable, spectacular, and miraculous things happen in your spiritual experiences, and then you're in a deeply vulnerable place reaching out to your dead brother, and there is nothing. I have had spirit leave things on my back porch. I have had so many things that were unexplainable. And then so many more times where I've been clawing and screaming at spirit to be met with nothing miraculous. I wish I would have been recording when you said that. Himbo sitting next to me goes, "That's because it's about faith and not rewards." And, whoo, man comes in hot. And sure, I think that faith is really necessary, but sometimes I'm like, man, I wish I had to go on faith all the fucking times that apparently I gotta. I determined that I am a house cat, and much I am like the human version of my personal house cat. I think that my cat and I might be the same person, and when she gets depressed, her grooming is poor, and I don't like how that's a reflection of me. But my husband called her short and grumpy today, too. And I was like, wait a minute. But I do be complaining an awful lot. I'm like a house cat that is taken care of by the most loyal German Shepherd. You are. You're a German Shepherd. Aren't you mad I didn't call you? Like, you usually, like, don't like it that I call you a Golden Retriever. Because I definitely think he has Golden Retriever boy energy. But if he were a dog, he would be a German Shepherd. And, that is just who he would be if he were a dog. But I'm pretty sure I am some Mariah Carey house cat. And I'm like, all of the drama. I call her Kitty five names. She's so dramatic. Oh, no. We're the same. This is one of the rambly times. I don't know. Today's spirit really let me know that my ego is a problem in ways that I didn't recognize. I knew that I had an ego the size of Texas. But I couldn't always figure out the ways it would manifest. And high ego, low self-esteem, I knew that my ego presented itself in perfectionism. I didn't realize that in codependency, my ego would convince me that I could main character my way into somebody else healing. No. You can't love somebody else enough for them to decide that their trauma blocks are something that they're going to heal through. That's not how life works. But it also means that their rejection isn't about you. So you don't have to take it so personally. Except when it's your fucking family, it's really goddamn personal. But spirit keeps leading me into what this season is, which is meeting my self-loathing with self-love. And I regularly tell my husband that I feel like I walk around looking like fucking Shrek. And I know that those types of self-loathing mirror my parents' self-loathing. And I don't want that for my children, so I need to work on it. It rears its ugly head, and I have to figure out how to love myself and find my value, regardless of how I feel about myself at times. Especially because it's all reflective of the ways I feel about my meat sack. Because I like me inside. I mean, I think I'm cringy and annoying, but I like me. But the outside meat sack, I have a lot of problems with. And there are familial wounds that play into that heavy. So I have to love myself through the parts of the wounds that are me. I wanted to on a live today at different points because when I shatter, sometimes I shatter big. And there were a lot of different anxiety and PTSD triggers that were so like, oh, I thank God for Himbo because at different points today, he babysat me because he's a loving and wonderful man who apparently really likes high-strung women. But I was broken a couple of different points. And spirit always gets really close when I'm in that kind of a crisis. And spirit was like, come on, baby. Take a deep breath and it'll be all right. My mother and I had simultaneous panic attacks today. I realized how much like my mother I am. We had two separate crises going on. I was in the basement, she was in Dad's room, and at the same time, she and I were having anxiety attacks. And it just dawned on us when we met each other on the stairs, seeing each other both. We love English folktales, and one of our favorite English folktales is of the Three Sillies. And I'll tell that to you sometime. I won't go into it now. It's a great English folktale. But we will look at each other at times when we know we're out of line and go, oh, we're three sillying, which means that you are worrying and having anxiety over shit that ain't done happened and you gots to calm the fuck down. And we met each other on the stairs and we were like, oh, we're three sillying, we're hysterical. And at the same time, our husbands were like, relax, just relax. And my dad had heard both of us. And so he hollers at both of us, relax, just relax. And I look at him like, oh, we married the same man, huh? Oh, thank God, no. My husband has some similarities to my father, and he has my father's best qualities, but he is a much better father than my father. But my mother and I both married men who really like high-strung women. My mother and I swear she's autistic too. She's uncomfortable with that label, but she is smart as fuck, deep as fuck, and loud as fuck. And so am I. We're the same kind of thing. She loves talking about how I'm in my 30s doing a lot of the same spiritual shit that she was doing in her 30s. And I'm like, well, cool. I need to not join a cult 6, 7 years from now. Because that whole hyper-conservative thing that she gets into is so gotta go. We can't be repeating that kind of shit. But thankfully, my mom made sure that I wouldn't marry a man like the men that she married because my mother well, has, I've read her birth chart. It says complicated romantic relationships. She's also an Aquarius, and I am not. She can cut people off with a swiftness. And I share my father's Leo sun, and I'm an emotional Cancer moon. I don't even know what the fuck all of that means, totally. I know that what's really cool is I am a Leo sun while my father is a Leo sun. But my son is a Cancer sun Leo moon and is the mirror opposite of me in that regard. And it's so funny because he is reflective of me in so many fucking ways. I don't know what the fucking stars have to do with it, but it's weird. And then my stepson is an Aquarius like my mother. Their birthdays are like 3 days apart. And they're not even related, but they are in many ways so similar. And I just think it's funny that we're all these fucking signs in one goddamn house and we haven't murdered anybody. The baby of the family is a Scorpio son. But Himbo is a Capricorn son. I can't even remember the rest of his birth chart. But like, so his sign, his tarot card is the devil. And he is like one of the wisest, steadiest, most compassionate and loving men that I've ever known who like really shits on toxic masculinity all the time and is just like, God, so many of those great qualities that I don't associate with any of those things. But again, I don't really know astrology that much. So maybe he's a very typical Capricorn. He can be the king of petty and the king of great witty remarks. He just never directs that energy at me. So I only see it when coworkers do fucked up shit. That was another ramble. Again, this is my podcast. So I just gonna have to accept the fact that on my podcast, rambling is a part of it. You know, a lot of people, when they do their art, they're so comfortable with being in their art for long periods that they'll listen to a song over and over and over again to get it right. Or they will read what they've written over and over and over again to make sure that it's perfect. I'll do that for like novels that I'm writing. But for things like a podcast, I do not have the emotional energy to bear with myself over and over again to make sure that this is a polished thing for people who are listening. This is so very raw and me that I've just got to give you the raw version of it. My father is a musician, and when he is composing, because he does not read music, he will listen to his song over and over and over. And at times, I was stuck in a house with a very loud studio playing the same goddamn song for 6 hours. My mother and I will joke about how unbearable it can be to live with an artist who's like half deaf, so he's got to blare the goddamn thing for 6 hours. But it is people who are committed to their art will go over it over and over and over again to give a finished and polished product. And I do not have that energy for things like this. I joke like this is my little radio show, and it's just not that serious. 'Cause like nobody's getting paid here. Like I put ads out in seasons once the next season has come out. So like previous seasons will have ads in them, just because you can, it's all free. And you can help me out if you listen, give a listen or a play to an old season with an ad in it. Thank you. You can give me like a penny. But nobody's getting paid here, so it's just not that serious. This is just my talkie blog. But lastly and not leastly, if you are one of the few people who listen, please know that I appreciate you because, as a person, one of my biggest love languages is being seen. That's why I have to be myself in all of the avenues that I'm in, because in order to be loved, I have to be seen. So the people that bother to listen to this, that are bothering to take a fucking interest in the shit that I have to say, thank you from the bottom of my fucking heart. There are people who I have met on the tickety talk, on the different social medias that have come here that pour love into my life, that support the art that I do and the projects and the things that I write and the shit that I say. And I'm astounded and humbled and grateful. Random strangers who have come to me and said, "Your words have touched me." And I'm like, thank you for helping me remember that I am not experiencing this life by myself, and that the struggles and the vulnerability and the being a raw human is a shared experience. I don't ever come into any of these platforms thinking that I fucking cure cancer or save the world or any shit like that. But I am so grateful for the people that have reached out to me and said, like, hey, the fact that you put yourself out there has really helped me. I save those messages. Thank you. They make a huge goddamn difference because it can feel very isolating. And I don't do this to validate anything but to validate myself from myself. But when other people link to me to tell me, connect with me that we are sharing something, that's really beautiful. I'm going to keep exploring lots of themes about death and necromancy. I'm going to keep sharing my spooky stories and my weird experiences and my growth. And I'm probably going to fucking ramble through the whole goddamn thing. Thanks for listening. All of the extra music for my podcast is my father, the great musician, Rex Stratton. And you can find him on Spotify, on YouTube, or wherever you get your music. Give him a listen. It'll make his year. Thanks so much. This is Hannah with Graveyard Gatherings. All of the extra music for my podcast is original music from my dad, Rex Stratton. And you would make his year if you gave any of his music a listen on YouTube or Spotify. Today's song is near and dear to my heart. One of my favorites. I picked it because I love it so much. Rollin' the Clover Rover from his first album, Santa at the Gulag. This has been Graveyard Gatherings. See you at the next one.